This week on Making Contact.
I think that the big turn has been the fact that Cubans have discussed openly what they think about what are the failures of the revolution and what are their achievements.
Cuba is ripe with change. The government is opening up to private enterprise and has urged the U.S. to ease trade restrictions. Even Fidel Castro is musing about everything from the country's economic model to the treatment of gays.
Our songs are very critical, but we also give proposals for change.
On this edition, we hear about hip-hop and change in Cuban society, and what people on the ground are saying about this new phase in the Cuban Revolution. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. Years ago, Alexi Rodriguez decided to take a raft and leave Cuba for the U.S. But instead of finding America, he found hip-hop. Now, as he rhymes, and as Fidel Castro ponders the future of Cuba, Alexi and his partner Mahia try to change what they can, like the revolutionaries before them. Sujatha Day visited Cuba to look at the Cuban model and how the beat, from trova to hip-hop, are part of a changing politics in the country.
Yo te enseño.
Alexei Rodriguez Mola and Mahia Lopez groove to the hip-hop beat just as well as anyone else, East Coast or West. Their beats are catchy, their rhymes profound, but they're not from L.A. or New York. They're from Regla, Cuba, a poor community with a rural character just across the bay from Havana. In the 19th century, freed black slaves immigrated to Regla, and it remains a center of Afro-Cuban culture. In their video, Los Pelos, Alexei and Mahia are dressed in large, bright, African-inspired shirts. They're rapping on the pastel-colored, ragged streets of Regla. Since 1996, their group, Obsesión, has performed to crowds all over the world and on television. Like most artists, you can catch them on MySpace or YouTube. Despite restrictions, many Cuban artists have access to the internet through state agencies. But the two are just as happy to be back in their own community in Regla. They are politically conscious rappers. You won't hear them so much rhyme about the Castros or politics, but about the black experience, machismo, sexism, and inequality. Alexei explains.
Tenemos mucho interés en que la gente se lleve la idea de que es una pareja de personas negras.
We really want people to know that this is a black couple speaking. The subject of blackness is very, very, very important to us. When I picked up a book about Malcolm X, it was like, poof.
Poof. Eso fue como, wow.
This is when we learned about such figures in the U.S. like Black Panthers Ananda and Asada. We learned many things. And then I was like, wait, why am I learning things about another country when I know nothing about my own? And then my own country started to interest me. It was through learning this history about the United States that I had much more interest in learning about my own country.
In some ways, Alexei and Mahia are modern-day Cuban revolutionaries trying to correct injustices. They take after their forefathers, insurgents from the 1959 Cuban Revolution. The Barbados, or bearded ones as they were called, also had a penchant for music and justice. Son de la Loma is one popular trova associated with Fidel Castro and his band of revolutionaries. Trova was a musical genre played by guitar-wielding troubadours who crisscrossed the country. Son de la Loma was played on their own pirate radio station, Radio Rebelde. It was played so much that it was banned by the capitalist Cuban regime led by Fulgencio Batista. Batista's regime was seen by many as corrupt. The United States owned most of the island's industries. Roberto Ruiz is a journalist for Cuban television and a filmmaker. He says that before the Cuban Revolution, things were quite different.
Before 1959, all the presidents in Cuba, the vast majority, were more interested in filling their pockets. And to fill their pockets, they have to serve the purpose of the United States. You know, during Batista's regime, there were a lot of assassinations in the street of the young people that protested against that regime. In fact, Fidel led one of the biggest movements that finally defeated the tyranny.
Fidel Castro and Che Guevara's 26th of July movement aimed to bring ideals of equality to the island. In 1957, the 26th of July march was composed by one of the members of the movement, Agustin Diaz. The song talks of a time of liberty, peace, and prosperity, away from insatiable tyrants. Musicians were recorded from amongst the top Cuban musicians of the day, those who played in luxury hotels, Carlos Faxes of the Faxes Quartet, and others. The song had to be recorded clandestinely. They rehearsed in moving cars so that they wouldn't be caught by the capitalist authorities. The anti-Batista movement from which the song came from was banned, and Castro exiled. But eventually, they returned and toppled Batista on January 1st, 1959.
From his stronghold in the wild Sierra Maestra Mountains, Cuba's Fidel Castro emerged triumphant after 2 years of guerrilla warfare against the Batista regime. The revolution that began.
At first, Castro tried to maintain good relations with the United States. He said he was more inspired by Roosevelt than Lenin. But as relations soured, Cuba became an ally of the Soviet Union. Property owned by Americans was nationalized, angering the U.S. Eventually, in 1960, trade with Cuba was deemed illegal. But Cuba's revolution has still managed to improve the standard of living for its citizens. Ruiz says the revolution has given people very tangible things.
Fidel has given us pride, has given education, has given the possibility of having medical assistance for every Cuban. He has made sure that no Cuban go to bed without having something to eat.
In fact, since the revolution, Cuba has the lowest level of income inequality in Latin America. While Cuba is one of the countries with the lowest per capita GDP, it ranks much higher in the United Nations Human Development Index. This is a measure of poverty, literacy, longevity, and general well-being. And it has the second highest literacy rate in the world at almost 100%. And while Americans have just started to implement key elements of universal public health care, Cubans have been able to see doctors free of charge in neighborhood policlinicos for decades. Back in the Cuban market, there is talk of change in the air. In 2008, Fidel Castro transferred the leadership to Raul Castro, his younger brother. A wave of reforms were launched. More access to the internet, the end of prohibitions to own cell phones, television, cars, and other electronic goods, which were previously restricted, and new buses from China. In spring of 2010, more reforms were proposed. Foreign investors were needed to invest in golf courses. While they still weren't allowed to own the land, they were allowed to lease it for 99 years. There is a bill before Cuba's National Assembly to allow small businesses in Cuba. The American media has begun to speculate about the end of communism on the island. Ruiz says people might criticize the system, but they are not dissatisfied with the socialist state. Cubans have many internal forums for debate. Often, between Cubans and not on the microphone, Cubans will talk about how there can be more openness, better management, and less bureaucracy. But often, they will also agree that they don't want to be where they were before the revolution.
Every Cuban can give you their own approach about this matter. And knowing as well that Cubans are very polemic, they have opinion in everything. Every one of us will have a different opinion. But I think, and I can say that most of the Cuban people appreciate what Fidel has done and why what he is still doing for the nation.
And changes have already emerged. Ruiz says they've even been welcomed by Fidel Castro.
In fact, he said that we all have to change everything that have to be changed. And he said that is a real revolution. Although I think that sometimes we are afraid of the word change. I don't know why. Maybe because our enemies has used many times that word. But these are real changes. I think that the big turn has been the fact that Cubans have discussed openly what they think about what are the failures of the revolution and what are their achievements. And they have done that without any pressure, without any fear, and that's a big turn, because before there was not that possibility.
We'll be right back with Sujatha Day's documentary about Cuban hip-hop. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. We now return to The Sound of Change, hip-hop in Cuba.
In the meantime, Alexei and Mahia's raps were born out of another major change. It was called the Special Period. A harsh economic recession in Cuba in the mid-1990s, caused by the collapse of the Soviet Union, Cuba's main supporter. 15 years ago, Alexei was what many Americans often see on the news. A Cuban trying to get out on a raft. Mahia explains.
Estamos hablando del periodo, los comienzos del periodo especial en Cuba.
It was the beginning of the special period. It was a really intense period. As young people, we were like, what do we do now? There were shortages of everything, food, clothing. It was really traumatic. There wasn't a lot going on. I mean, there was prostitution, pimping, drugs, and everything else going on, so people were asking, what do we do now? So hip-hop became our way of staying out of the streets. Instead of drugs and violence, we could write songs, we could sing, we could listen to this music. So the influence of hip-hop was very positive for youth. We would think of nothing but hip-hop.
Alexei was working as a tour guide. Mahia was studying communications. After they met and married in 1993, they both founded the group. At that time, hip-hop was exploding in the Alomar neighborhood east of Havana. Alexei felt that during the special period, it was hip-hop that saved his life.
A mí me dio voz muy importante para mí.
With hip-hop, I was able to speak of many things. It gave me a very important voice and influenced my self-esteem. It gave me the possibility to see how I was going to grow. In this neighborhood, I learned very much. It gave me values. And because of this, I divide my life into before hip-hop and after hip-hop. a lot of us could have ended up dead or in jail or ended up badly in another country. You never know.
Often, Alexei and Mahia rap about the same problems that American progressives do. They have taken their rap to do work in prisons, at the World Social Forum, and to the Apollo Theater in New York. They often use the Black experience, Afro-Cuban music and poetry, and also orishas, an Afro-Cuban religion. Now they rap with the help of Ashanti Shakur, the Black Panther who fled the States after being convicted of killing a police officer. Mahia recalls being inspired by meeting her.
At this time, for example, we had the presence of Nayanda and Asada. They taught us many things. A lot of wisdom about how the U.S. hip-hop movement was being co-opted and manipulated by the media. They were like lights to us.
Mahia and Alexei tried to bring both of their points of view to the table within a debate. They feel it is important to defend what each of them believes to be true.
Como dicen, la verdad no es absoluta. Sí, es muy importante para nosotros tener nuestra verdad y defender esa verdad.
As they say, truth is not absolute. It's really important to us to have our own truth and to defend our truth. Mahia and I don't agree on everything, but the same, we reflect on a song so that people will have access to debate, which is a weak point in Cuban society.
Other Cuban hip-hop artists rap about the same thing, change. Roberto Zurbano works at the Casa de la Cultura Latinoamericana in Havana. He is the editor of Movimiento, a Cuban hip-hop journal. Zurbano says that rap came from poor Black neighborhoods, which were especially hit by the special period.
Durante la crisis económica, la revolución en Cuba no
puede... During the economic crisis, the Cuban Revolution could not give the same opportunities as before. The hip-hop movement was born exactly in the middle of the economic crisis. So what were these young people asking who came from poor, working-class urban neighborhoods? These youth were asking for more revolution in the sense that they wanted more social opportunities.
Más revolución en el sentido de que están pidiendo más oportunidades sociales para ellos.
In the past, there has been some suspicion about hip-hop. Not only is it an American art form, but it also raises questions.
La falta de comprensión sobre la cultura hip-hop en Cuba.
The misunderstanding of hip-hop culture in Cuba is because it is not a traditional form of Cuban culture. On the other hand, hip-hop culture asks a lot of inconvenient questions. However, these young rappers have a level of consciousness, have a high revolutionary consciousness because they want to transform reality. They make a social critique of the problems of the revolution, and they are capable of doing this with the utmost sincerity. This social criticism is very responsible and creative as well. It helps the revolution to take into account its own problems so that they can be confronted.
But while Alexei and Mahia may criticize, they see themselves as strengthening the revolution, not going against it.
Lo estamos haciendo un punto de vista, o sea, somos dos artistas negros de la cultura hip-hop.
We come from the point of view of two Black artists from hip-hop culture who are revolutionary. We are also defending this system and not another one. We are improving or criticizing this system and not another one. Our songs are very critical, but we also give proposals for change.
Zurbano says, for this reason, the contemporary hip-hop culture in Cuba has been compared to the singers of the Nueva Trova in the 1970s.
Si el poeta eres tú.
The song is Si el poeta eres tú. Sung to Che Guevara, it is an example of Nueva Trova. This music was used to transport Cuban ideals throughout Latin America. Like the trova before it, it uses the old folk singing, but it adds politics. But just like hip-hop, it was inspired in part by American music. Protest singers like Bob Dylan and Joan Baez.
Y lo estrenó con voces de fusil fuiste tú.
Y hoy cruzamos la frontera y nos encontramos en el sitio donde no somos extranjeros. Puerto Rico y Cuba.
Like the Cuban beat, Cuba itself is constantly changing. With young people, people who never even knew the revolution, making up a sizable part of the population, there will be many debates to come. And in this market in Havana, people are watching. This is Sujatha Day for Making Contact in Havana, Cuba.
Things are changing so fast in Cuba, it's hard to keep track. Political prisoners have been released. Fidel Castro has apologized for past treatment of gays. The government decided to lay off 1 million state workers in hopes they'll find a place in private enterprise. Cuban officials have also made small but concrete proposals for how the Obama administration can ease the trade embargo. They're even leasing out golf courses to private investors. Sujatha Day checked back in with one of her sources, Roberto Ruiz Rabo, a filmmaker and a journalist with Cuban television. Rabo says that while the model of the state controlling all economic activities may have worked for a while, it doesn't right now.
But it's a long time that it's not working anymore. I think the government is trying to sort out the economical problem that we have been facing with the impact of the global economy failure and the failure of our own economy due to the embargo and also due to a mismanagement of the government, I think. For example, in the last years, we have been focused in developing not economical activities. For example, during many, many years, the land has been neglected because we have been receiving agricultural products from other countries, something that is very important because in Cuba, during these last 50 years, there has been a big shortage of food. Even when the state has guaranteed a certain amount of food for the population, it's not enough. It hasn't been enough. And meanwhile, our land has been neglected. There's no credit for people who want to develop private business. And that has caused a very bad impact in our economy.
What is changing right now in the ground, and what do you feel about these changes?
There have always been changes in Cuba, but in my opinion, it's not the changes that we really, as Cubans, are expecting. For example, 4 years ago when Raúl came into the government to be the prime minister, he called all the population and the workers to discuss our problems and to say what has to be changed. That hasn't happened in the way that we wanted. There are changes, I can say there are changes, but they are very slow. I don't know if you have heard some days ago that there has been the new policy of changing of shortage of employment and the stimulation of private initiatives. Maybe that's a better way to face our problems in the economy now. But it's going to affect a very big amount of people, of ordinary people. You know, what's going to happen with those people who are going to be suddenly without any employment and they are not going to be receiving salary.
What are people saying about all these comments from Fidel Castro and what's happening on the ground?
I have friends who have sent their impressions and their opinions to me. And they're saying that measures would have been taken a lot of more years ago, because the mismanagement is not a new thing. You know, it's something that is going on from many years. For example, the stimulation of the private initiatives, that hasn't happened. In one time there was a stimulation of those kind of activities, then the government get some credits or some help from the Venezuelan economy, and they stopped to do that. And they concentrated their effort to send doctors and teachers to other countries. I don't think it's a bad thing if solidarity is developed to other countries. But they concentrated all the efforts to that. They didn't put too much effort in the domestic economy.
We are in a one-party system, in a fairly closed media environment. Is there any talk on that level of different reforms?
We are not asking for a multi-party society, really. But we think that there must be more opposition to whatever. Because I don't think that the idea or the effort or the philosophy of one state can develop itself if it has no opposition to them. And that's what happened in Cuba. There's one point of view. If you listen to only one side, you don't have the complete panorama of any aspect in life.
So what do you think then is the future of the revolution?
The revolution maybe will survive. I don't know. Maybe will survive. But it will only survive if the revolution itself, or the leaders of the main leaders of the revolution, really, really focus the effort of the Cuban people in the economy. If we focus that in the economy, the revolution will survive. If we don't, if our government don't do that, we are not going to survive. So the future depends on the management of the present leaders of the Cuban Revolution.
Is the future then capitalist?
As the present global economy is led by capitalist countries, and for example, in the United States, there's a big problem. They are in trouble with the economy. So can we say that it's a failure of the capitalist economy, that situation? Can we say that in the same way? Can we say that it's a failure of socialism as philosophy, the problem of the present situation of the economy, or the future of the global economy is the socialist economy? Maybe. Maybe. Nobody knows. The procedures and the way that it is managed, that's what's going to be looked.
That was Canadian journalist Sujatha Day speaking with Cuban filmmaker Roberto Ruiz Rebo, who's currently in Mexico. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Luis Brownrigg, Luz Maria Olguin, Eric Hamovich, Daniel Inostroza, Isidro Rojas, Catherine Beeman, Caroline Turcotte, Oficina de la Prensa Internacional de Cuba, and Neil Griffith. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736 or check out our website at radioproject.org. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.